Hello, Fuji Lovers. Episode 26 of the podcast is here. And needless to say, it's brought to you by the Fuji Life magazine, the number one publication for users of the Fujifilm X-Series camera system. Very, very warm welcome to all our new subscribers and members of the community. Our special March edition, where we are featuring women Fujifilm photographers, is getting tons of some truly wonderful feedback. So thank you so much for that. And of course, we are already working on the April edition of the magazine, which will be available April 7th. We are also getting some great comments from those of you who became members of the Fujilove Extended Plan, especially on the live Fujilove Photography webinars. So also thank you so much for that. Let's jump into today's episode. Jens Krauer's guest is Olaf Staba, Fujifilm shooter, Canadian photographer, longtime Fujilove contributor, wonderful educator, workshop leader, and one of the most beloved members of the Fujilove community. It's always a pleasure to listen and talk to Olaf, so I am pretty sure you will have a wonderful time listening to Jens's and Olaf's today's conversation. Enjoy the show. 500px, wonderful community of photographers and the world's leading photo sharing site. I have been sharing my own photographs on several different platforms, and 500px is definitely the one which I recommend the most. Your photos will shine and look really beautiful on their site. So join millions of photographers who share already their photos, learn and grow together with them every day. 500px.com.
I'm Kevin Mullins, a UK-based documentary photographer, official Fujifilm X photographer, and longtime subscriber to Fujilove. This episode is sponsored by Alien Skin, creators of Exposure X3, the advanced photo and RAW editor. I've been using Alien Skin Exposure for the last few years and seen the application mature into a fully featured RAW editor. I particularly like the way that the Exposure film presets allow me to get something magical from the Fujifilm RAW files at the touch of a button. Exposure is quick to use, easy to use, and can act as a standalone product or a plugin to Lightroom and Photoshop. Download a free trial now and get 10% off with the coupon code FUJILOVE.
Welcome to this special episode of the FUJILOVE podcast. Today, Olaf joins me, Olaf Staba. Olaf, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you, Jens?
I'm good, and I'm looking forward to talk, actually, because today's episode is based on an idea that came out of the Fujilove group. We had a vivid discussion about what a good picture is. And actually, Tomas suggested that we regularly pick out subjects from the group and maybe discuss them in the podcast. Tomas should have been here too. Unfortunately, he can't join us, but he dropped us a few questions to talk about today. So, Olaf, just a quick introduction for people who don't know you. Explain us who you are and what you photograph.
Okay, so I'm a, of course, photographer, writer, visual poet, coffee lover, and a big fan of Jens Krauer work. So, yeah, and I'm Vancouver-based in Canada. That's all about me. And mostly I photograph what I would call street photography. Recently, I started using a term, a visual poet, because some people wrote to me as I published my photos. They like, hey, wait, this is not street photography. So I thought, to be honest, definitions are not that important to me. I'm really, really after beautiful visuals. So I thought, wow, that's a cool term. So I started using it.
So you define yourself as a visual poet, or would you still say you're a street photographer?
I use both terms. And, you know, it depends how you define street photography, because some people have very strict definition of street photography. And I would certainly agree that some of my work doesn't fit into genre of street photography. But having said that, most of my images could be, I guess, are street photography. So, you know, I really don't like having these arguments online with people whether this image is street photography or not. So I try to find a different term for my photography, and I could not find anything. And so one of my students wrote to me that when he looks at my imagery, is like poetry. And another person wrote a similar term. So I thought, like, wow, I like it a lot. So yeah, let's do it.
Isn't that like a huge compliment if somebody tells you that your work is visual poetry? That's like, that's a really nice words to describe somebody's work.
I have to tell you, I never thought it this way, but once people started using this term, I felt like, wow, this is really cool. I feel so flattened, and I just love it. And I think that's the best term so far I could find for my photography, because I just like taking elements and putting them together. And sometimes it could be interior of the store mixed with some elements on the street. And once you start doing this and looking at this sort of imagery, people, as I mentioned earlier, people started to question, like, okay, but this is, I don't know, is it street photography or not? And, you know, I was not sure what to answer. So, yeah, so I started using it. And yes, you are right, Jens. I feel it feels very nice to hear such a description of your photography. And, yeah, that's the best thing I could find so far.
I think it makes a lot of sense. But just for the record, what is your definition of street photography? Do you have one? I mean, there's as many as there are street photographers, but what is your personal definition?
Well, for me, is seeing, you know, it's seeing urban life your own way. That's the short definition I have. So, because for me, photography is a very personal way of seeing the world, and it applies directly to street photography. So, for example, some people say, oh, you should have people in your photo once you claim you are doing street photography. And I would say, well, I'm not sure about it. So street photography is seeing the world, urban life, your own way. That's the shortest definition I have.
I totally agree with your definition. I don't think necessarily you need people, even though the traditional way, it absolutely has people in the shot. But then there's amazing photographers who don't deal with people at all, and they make massive statements by doing series of things where you have no signs of people in the images. Although it does still represent human life, but you don't need actually faces in the pictures to do street photography.
Oh, you're right. And yes, listen, once you're on the subject, you are a fantastic street photographer, and I'm a big admirer of your black and white work. Like, what is your definition of street photography?
Well, my definition is I struggle to really define it. I think it has something to do with the interest in human beings for me, be it directly into people themselves, I mean, faces, stories, things that you can read of people. And it can also be things that just represent who we are and what we do. And I think as time goes on, it becomes more and more difficult to define street photography, because if you look into what people do these days with color, with multi-layered scenes, I'm truly impressed by these things. And I think the definition of street photography in itself is massively changing. I'm looking forward to where we are in 20 years and how we define street photography then, not only in terms of content, but also in terms of tools that we use, and might get a different format. So I couldn't really answer your question. I think it's everything that is centered around documenting the human condition. And that's kind of wide. It's quite a wide field to move in.
Yeah, that's a great definition. And in fact, when I looked at your work, it fits perfectly with what you just said. And you have such a strong human element in your imagery that is just fantastic. But what I really especially like, that, you know, I guess many people like to put this human element into the image, but many people are struggling to do it right. I mean, in your imagery, it almost like it's one beautiful image. So placing human element within all the other elements is much harder than many people think, you know, and definitely sometimes I try to do it as well, but I would say 90% of my attempts are just failures, you know. So you are doing really a good job, Jens.
Well, I have to let you know that 99% of my attempts are failures too, but you don't get to see them. That's the point.
Yes, yes.
But you brought up an interesting thing, because when I reflect, I usually go for people. I see certain things that make me interested in a person or in a certain setting. And we had a few questions prepared that we wanted to discuss amongst ourselves. I'm just going to jump forward, because I would actually be interested, speaking of this, what do you feel triggered by? You know, we all walk down the street, we look, we search for interesting things. What triggers your feeling that there could be an image?
Yeah, so you just mentioned just a second ago that you are kind of triggered by this human element, by personality or look of someone. And I have spent the last few years actually trying to figure out this very question, like, what is it that triggers you to start crafting the image? And I think that the starting point of this whole discussion, and this is something that that is not that covered widely, but for me, is there are two words. It's concentration and observation. Mm-hmm. And I love the quote by Elior Erwitt, who described this way, that he said, quote, "To me, photography is the art of observation. It's about finding something interesting in ordinary place." And I think for the last 2 years, I really tried to train my brain and my just really concentrate, but from the photographic point of view. You know, because we all have those habits, and we are living in the society when it's all about efficiency. So let's say if you walk to work, usually what we want to do, we want to get from point A to point B in the quickest possible. We want to do it efficient. We don't want to bump into somebody. We don't want to, you know, walk on the red lights. Well, even though some people do it. But when I go on the street, I noticed that I need to function totally differently. And it's really hard to describe, but I think the best way to describe it is, maybe you remember, yes, when you were like young kid and you were waiting maybe with your parents or with your mom for some appointment, and you had to sit in the chair for like hour waiting. And I always try to remember, so as a kid, we were so bored that we started doing this really annoying things and looking under the chair, looking at the ceiling, playing with things that our mom or our parents went crazy, you know? And I think that's exactly attitude once you hit the street. You need to look at things the way you don't look normally being on the street. So for me, this is such an important subject. But the next step, what really triggers this interest are, I would say in most of my photos are three things. First, it's the light. Many of my photographs, I start for looking at light. And I mean light, 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 nothing else. And then I start adding elements to it. So for example, beautiful stage, or a subject. The second trigger for me are kind of graphical elements. And this is quite unusual, but sometimes I see the scene and I'm taken by the beauty of it from the design point of view. So, so it could be the building, it could be arrangement of elements, how the, for example, how some cars are parked on the street, or, you know, this sort of things. And then I start adding and building on the top of it. And of course, the third one, the major one, because there are other ones, but the major one is human element. I may see interesting person, situation, interesting character. So to summarize, the three main triggers is light, graphical elements or design, or you can call it a stage. I call it a stage. And the third one is human element.
It makes absolutely sense to me. It's funny that when I teach workshops, I first of all always quote Elliot Erwitt, as you just did. So I totally agree with that. That's why it's an interesting question, because what you see and how you see says a lot about the photographer itself, which you then might also realize if you look back in a photographer's images over the course of years. Usually photographers make deeper statements about themselves in the totality of the work they did than they did actually about each single subject. So it says a lot about us, what we see and how we see. And also in terms of elements, I always tell people that I either look for light, geometry, emotion, or relevance. And whenever I see anything of that, I go towards it and I try to investigate the potential for a good image.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, that's, I 100% agree. Lovely. Yeah.
So when you go out, do you prefer to hunt with your camera, or do you go out and just take things in and are kind of in a zen state where you have no expectations?
Well, if I were Josef Koudelka, very famous photographer, he used to say, quote, look at something and think, this is right. And this is awesome, you know, look at something and think, this is right. But of course, he was a genius. And for us, we have to put way more work into it. Answering your question, I think your question refers to a very popular concept in street photography, which is the term decisive moment. Mm-hmm. Of course, established in the 50s by Cartier-Bresson. And, you know, the idea is to capture this fleeing moment that makes the image powerful. And when I look at people's work and at discussions online, it appears that this has become extremely popular. Almost everyone wants to capture this street action. And as a result, you have many photographers almost running around cities and shooting at every passerby just to capture this action. And, you know, I'm not sure that this is always the best way to go. As I said, for some people it may work, but very often this kind of hunt, like almost running around and shooting with a notion that, okay, maybe this is a decisive moment, many of these images just lacked, you know, narrative, and they are very messy visually. And the problem is that I believe this idea is slightly misunderstood. Because when you look, for example, at the famous staircase image with a passing biker by Cartier-Bresson, you know, of course, everyone would say, oh, yeah, that's a decisive moment. But when you start reading and finding out actually how this image was taken, you know, it's first what Cartier-Bresson did, found the staircase. So basically, he designed almost a stage for himself. He had this beautiful background with a very strong graphical elements. And then he was waiting for this decisive moment to happen. And once this biker was passing by, he just completed the image. So for me, answer to your question is that when I look at my photography, I would say I mix both. Because yes, in the sense I'm hunting, at certain points in the process, but I think I'm using I like to find a sort of a stage or a background when I could design by framing, by changing perspective, and then I start hunting. So for me, it's a mix of both.
I agree. I mean, I see both all the points you mentioned. I also agree that Cartier-Bresson, as much of a genius he was, I think the decisive moment is a bit of a myth. As you just mentioned, a lot of times Cartier-Bresson himself was like camping out and selecting backdrops and waiting for people to walk in. What I think is important regarding the so-called decisive moment is that we demystify it a bit. I think a lot of people get very hectic and start, as you said, shooting a lot of things around them, hoping to catch something relevant. I see the decisive moment as something that is actually crafted and that includes certain steps in terms of how you behave and how you see. And then you kind of approach something because you see that potential and take this image. But the first step to me is to slow down and to not shoot everything, but to observe and to kind of feel out where it's worth to dive in. I also believe that a lot of good street images are made of a few steps. I believe the first one is to anticipate what might happen next, to position yourself, then to make a few decisions in terms of what do I include in the image and what do I try to exclude, and then to finally take the shot. But I figured that there's very few people who can just intentionally turn around, snap a picture, and it's going to be a piece of art or you're going to really capture an emotional moment. I think Daido Moriyama might be somebody who is really good at that, but the majority of people I know who take reflected street images rather slow down than speed up.
100% agree. And I think you used a very important word, the word crafting. Because for many people, photography, because in its nature, in the technical nature, you just press one button. So for many people, it's something that like, well, it's so fast, it's quick. But in fact, when I have conversation with photographers I admire, it's like almost the same answer is always coming, that this is process of crafting. Of course, for some people, it's very short because they make so many decisions in a very short period of time. But if you start analyzing the processes, it involves like seeing the image and crafting and arranging elements and looking at the light. And this is such a fascinating project. So I'm really glad that you used the word craft, because craftsmanship, the word, applies a very deliberate, careful, slow process. And I think for me, this is exactly what photography is. And you just nailed it, I think, right there.
I'm Kevin Mullins, a UK-based documentary photographer, official Fujifilm ex-photographer, and longtime Fuji Love subscriber. Why don't you try out Alien Skin Exposure today? I really love the film presets, especially the moody black and white Kodalith. And of course, there are hundreds more. It's a great application for all of your retouching and editing needs, including grain, vignettes, and overlays. Alien Skin Exposure boasts great workflow, tools, its speed, and quick and easy to use. Download a free trial today and get 10% off with the code FUJILOVE.
I think there's another quote of actually also Cartier-Bresson that we can bring in. I cannot exactly quote it, but I also use it in the workshop where he says, actually, you need to fall back, you need to be invisible, and you need to move very slow and not cause any suspicion. But then all of a sudden, in this fraction of a second, you need to snap, be super fast, and immediately fall back into this observing mode.
Exactly, yes. No, I agree 100%.
which is also funny because in terms of cameras, I actually also believe that the best quality of my camera is that it does not disturb me, interrupt me, or interfere with that process. So the camera being actually no point of attention in the process of creation for me is its biggest quality at the end of the day.
I'm so happy you just said that because I truly believe that when I work with my students, very often I see a camera for them is almost like a distraction. So very often I take my students and for an hour I said, let's put away our cameras. Because they are so concentrated on technical terms, f-stop, they just cannot see. They just cannot observe and they cannot concentrate. And, you know, Dorota Lange, I'm not sure if I remember correctly, but she said, a camera is a tool for learning how to see without a camera. And I just love this quote.
I think also, which is good to mention in that context, is that because the camera is actually just an amplifier. I think the other thing we need to mention is that if you want to be, for me, subjective opinion, if you want to be creative in photography, you actually need to bring your creativity from outside of photography. And the camera is definitely just a tool. I mean, if you look at my camera, this thing is I painted it black. It's beat up. I dropped it. Many things. I just pick it up and check if it's still working. And if it still works, it's totally fine. It doesn't need to be clean or perfect or anything of that. So for me, the camera just enables me to execute what I bring with me and what I see that comes outside of comes from outside of photography. As we talk about cameras, and of course we are on the Fujilove podcast, so we should also talk about our hopefully beloved Fuji cameras. What's your setup, Olaf? What do you prefer to shoot with?
You know, I last year, like I was one of the first Fuji X-Series bloggers on the internet as I acquired the original X100, which the camera that, like, probably for most of the people that shoot Fuji, that's how they started the whole adventure, because, of course, it was the first X-Series camera. And then I purchased X-Pro, X-Pro 2, I had X-T2, I had almost all the lenses in the X-Series lineup. And last year, I made decision that I want to change my setup. So I sold all my gear except the X100F. And the reason I sold it, because I wanted to have funds to purchase the medium format GFX.
Oh, you did? You own a GFX?
Well, no. I didn't get there yet. No, I sold all my gear. And, you know, I had some family, you know, kind of emergency. So I could not use these funds last year to buy GFX. Mm-hmm. And so, interesting enough, for the last almost a year, the only camera I was shooting with, I have been shooting with, is the X100F. And why is it interesting experiment? Because somehow I thought that I would be missing all the other cameras and all other lenses. And after a few months and after a few trips, photography trips to Europe and other places, I was just traveling and shooting with the X100F. And to my huge surprise, I don't even have a feel or need for another camera. So you know, it's going back to your question. I have been shooting with just one camera, one lens, and I just love it. I love traveling with it. I love framing with it. I love how small and unobstructive it is. And yes, I'm still planning to purchase the medium format for other reasons, because I need it for my upcoming project. But you know what? I think I could live with just X100F And I just noticed I don't need anything else.
Was it liberating for you to realize that you don't need all of that equipment?
Well, yes. You know, the short answer is yes. And in fact, even back then, when I had all this gear, I was shooting 90% of my work was shot with the X100, you know, all the iteration, X100, S, T, and F recently. So I knew this is the camera, but I always had this feeling that, wow, maybe if you have just X100F, maybe you would need something else. So I had all this gear. And right now, after this experience of having only one camera, yes, it was unbelievably liberating because right now I leave my house and I just grab one camera.
Well, my theory is that the equipment people own, I think 90% of the time, they exactly do that. They take one body, one or two lenses, and the rest probably either is carried around in camera bags or sits at home collecting dust. But if we're really honest to ourselves, we all have this one combination that we could live with without all the other stuff.
100% agree. And another interesting thing, when I had all this gear, I noticed that when I was leaving my house, I always pick one camera and one lens. So, for example, I was shooting for my RAIN project, so I would grab the X-Pro2 and the 56 lens. Or the other time, I took X100F. So, you know, each time I was leaving the house, I made deliberate choice for one lens and one camera. It was very rare for me to pack all of it together. The only exception was when we sometimes, Kasia and I, we go for a road trip. So I put everything in the back of my car so I don't care. I don't have to carry it. So in that case, I was taking a lot of gear. But normally, when I was leaving the house, I just took one camera and one lens. I have this tendency, I just cannot switch. Once I start shooting with a certain lens, my eye adjusts and I have a very hard time just to suddenly, boom, I need to change the lens. I cannot do it.
I think it disrupts actually the visual flow. Once you get used to seeing things in a certain with a certain lens, I think you can really dive into that as well. So again, like, I would rather try to get the best out of this combination than to start fiddling with different lenses and changing setups and things like that.
Agree with that, yes.
Well, I had actually the chance to, and I can absolutely recommend it to you. I had the chance to, or I still have the chance to play with the GFX. And I was surprised because I'm doing a documentary project, which is kind of street style here in Zurich. And the GFX performs beautifully out on the street. So I can absolutely encourage you to even give it a try as a street camera.
Well, actually I did because, I have it for a few weeks. The Fujifilm was kind enough to send it to me. And I just love the camera. And I think, I'm not sure if you agree with me, but this camera slows you down even more.
It does.
Because of the nature of medium format. And I noticed because I tried on the street, I tried in landscape, I tried travel photography, but what was the most fascinating for me was try it on the street with one lens. And I agree with you. It's just such a fantastic machine. I think I made my decision. And yes, I wanna add it to the other camera because I was always, right now I'm thinking the X100F would be this camera that you grab each time you leave the house. And the GFX would be this machine that you use for specific projects.
I agree with that approach. I do exactly the same. Although what you mentioned, I truly enjoyed that. I was 3 days in Amsterdam with the GFX on the street. And it's right. It's like street photography in slow motion, but in an extremely good way, because you need to move a little bit more consciously. You might need to get a bit closer, and the chances are smaller you get the image. And strangely, I enjoy that kind of setup because the challenge is bigger, so I enjoy more doing it.
Yeah, so it's very interesting that you mentioned this, because when I had a GFX and I took it on the streets, I had the X100F with me. So I really like looking at the scene from different perspective. And sometimes I like to explore the scene so much that some of my students are sick of it. They said, like, come on, Olaf, we cannot spend 1 hour in this one spot.
Let's move on.
Let's move on. But that's how I like to shoot, because I'm always going for this, the best image I can get out of the scene. So I need to explore it. So I was framing and walking around the scene with my X100F. And once I decided on the framing, on all the decisions, I took my GFX and just completed it. So it was a very strange way to experiment. But yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I think a healthy dose of obsession is a good thing in photography in general. I know the feeling not wanting to leave in a place because I feel like there's a better picture going to come up. But at some point, unfortunately, you have to go on.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Time starts slowly running out as we go for the half-hour format. In terms of closing words, is there anything you want to let the Fujilove community know? I don't think it's the last time we're going to hear you, Olaf, but just for this time, what knowledge can you share with the Fujilovers?
I would say, first of all, I think recently Tomas wrote a piece about celebrating the anniversary of the Fujilove magazine. And I think we both, Jens, I think we have to agree that the community is fantastic, the Fujilove community.
It absolutely is.
You know, I have been participating in some chat rooms or, areas of internet when they talk about photography. But I think what Tomas created is really something unique. And I'm not saying this just to be cute. When I look at conversations we are having all together, the sort of questions that are being asked, it's fantastic. Because yes, and what's really interesting about this whole thing, that we call ourselves the Fujilove. So you would think like, oh, all we're going to do is to talk about Fuji cameras. But it's not the case. We talk about light. We talk about extremely interesting subject, which I don't find anywhere else. So from that perspective, I would say I'm very pleased. I meet a lot of amazing photographers. And what I would like to add, I see lots of new emerging photographers because, you know, we all have this tendency to love these big names, you know, in photography. But I see lots of many young people coming with fantastic visual ideas. And I look at their work and I think, wow, I have never thought about this. This is really great. So today, if I can leave one thought, I don't want it to be specifically, you know, how to do something. I just want to say that we all should support and be open-minded towards young photographers. I mean not young by age, but I mean young by the how long they have been doing this. Because many of them have fantastic ideas, and we should kind of support them, as Tomas do, on the Fujilove in the Fujilove community, but we should also learn from them, because I do it all the time. You know, they have different perspective, and sometimes they are not, they don't have a baggage, this visual baggage that we carry. I'm not sure if you agree with this, Jens, but But we have tendency, especially if we have successful photography, if people like our work, we have tendency to go, oh, yes, that's what I do. It's popular. I will keep doing this.
I'm always open for people to break my concepts. And I think that's essentially what you're saying is we should remain open for things, for people that can change our perspective and views. And I totally appreciate that. I'm also somebody who, when I ask for feedback for my pictures, I ask for what you think is bad. And in that sense, I'm not afraid of people to change the game. And every time I see somebody doing something very interesting, no matter if it's a new or an old photographer, I'm always super interested because that brings variety, innovation, and creativity to the table. And I also agree with you that in the Fujilove group on Facebook, I always continue to see amazing photographers and images that I've never heard of before or never seen before, and I continue to be impressed. And this is, besides the constructive questions, sure, one of the qualities that exists in the Fujilove group.
That's well said, Jens. And I think we should keep going and cheering up Tomasz in developing this whole thing. And thank you for doing the podcast, Jens, because, you know, you're certainly asking the right questions.
I'm trying. I'm equally new in this, but I thoroughly enjoy it. So I'll continue improving as we go along. Well, Olaf, great conversation. I just realized we could actually go on literally for hours because we share the same passion and some points of view on how we photograph. But as I said, I think this is not going to be the last time we hear from you. In the meantime, we will read from you in the Fujilove group, certainly, and on your blog and on your webpage. Where can we find you, Olaf?
My home is olafphotoblog.com. It's one long word, olafphotoblog.com. That's where I put most of my effort and most of my photography and writings. I'm, of course, on the Instagram, olaf_photo, on Twitter, olafphoto, and if you like my writings, also, there is a new column in the Fujilove magazine. It's called Simplicity in Seeing, when I try to discuss some maybe unusual different subjects. So you can find me there. And in fact, the next month issue of the Fujilove magazine, I will be asking a question: does a photographer have responsibility towards the audience?
I'm quite sure he does. I actually would love to dive right back into discussion regarding this, but we'll have to continue this at another occasion, Olaf. Thank you so much for your wise words. I can give you that compliment back. I'm a huge fan of your photography, and we're all looking forward to read, see, and hear more from you in the future.
Great to be here. Thank you, Jens.
Thank you for listening to the Fujilove Podcast. Stay up to date with Fujilove. Follow our Facebook page and join the Fujilove Facebook Readers Group. Head over to www.fujilove.com for all the necessary information. Take good care, and we will talk to you next time.